It is The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Lante is off to his baseball game. We are going to talk some Illini basketball here coming up, as well as some football as well. You got some news in the defensive backfield on two fronts for Brett Bielema and company. They have a big transfer coming in from Texas. They also have a new coach that we're going to talk about. But let's start with the hoop side. The NBA draft combine is going on as we speak. It's been since yesterday, I believe it started, and we'll run through the rest of this week. You'll have 5-on-5 scrimmages. Terrence Shannon Jr. not currently slated to participate in those as he did last year, but electing to not play in those as of now. He's not on the rosters to play in some of these 5-on-5s, which will take place, I think, maybe even starting tomorrow, if I believe, because there's draft coverage both tomorrow and Wednesday on ESPN, and that's when we saw some of that last year. Coleman Hawkins will play 5-on-5. Today you have a lot of the measurements, the athletic testing. Be interested to see, although both guys got that last year, so while Shannon had the fastest three-quarter court sprint of anybody in the combine last year, I think he was third in one of the shuttle drills or something like that. It was the lane agility drill. He was third in vertical, as you would imagine. Decently impressive at 38 inches. Hawkins did not test exceptionally well athletically in terms of like vertical lane agility. That's not really his strength. He's not a plus-plus athlete. In the 5-on-5, I think it will matter what he shows, because I think the teams are going to want to see how healthy is the knee. Is he moving around pretty well? Is he guarding in space pretty well? A guy that guarded a lot of fives last year. Maybe this is more of the way the game will be open. And I don't think, and Kyle, maybe you've seen it, I don't have the roster in front of me. I'm sure I could find it. I don't, to my knowledge, know that Edie and Klingon are going to play in the 5-on-5. If they aren't, then I'm guessing Hawkins, and maybe he's playing the 4 in these anyway. I don't know.
They are not.
Okay, they are
Edie
not.
Edie and Klingon are not listed.
I'm sure Coleman Hawkins is loving that, because if they were, he might have to be guarding them once again.
By the way, Coleman Hawkins' height without shoes measured in 6'8 and a fourth.
I saw that. That was a smidge shorter than I would have expected. Yeah. Listed at 6'10 overall, 6'10 in shoes. I know he was listed also at, as of today, 215 pounds. That's on the lighter side for a center, no doubt.
Yeah, he's not playing center in the league.
No.
Although
no.
Some teams are playing these smaller lineups, and every offense is so spread out now with a bunch of five out and pick and pop stuff. Like, maybe. I don't know. But he's probably going to play the 4 in the league, you'd think.
Right. And you're right, there are going to be those smaller ball lineups. And I know some people are now that the T-Wolves, although there's been a response by the Nuggets with Jokic doing the things that he did yesterday. I know Jamal Murray had a good game 3, but with Towns and Gobert playing together, like, hey, maybe small ball's dead in the NBA. And I don't think it's just talking about the 4 and the 5 spot. I think it's obviously positional size as well, and even having – height and length in the backcourt, those type of things. But anyways, I didn't see Terrence last year, I think without shoes, 6'5½, I believe, was his measurement. And I don't, again, we'll see what those are coming out today, which, of course, you know, between age 22 and 23.
Nice. 6'5¾ for Shannon.
Oh,
grew a quarter of an inch. Wow.
You know, it's pretty well thought of that, you know, when you're from 22 to 23, you get that quarter inch that we're all been hoping to get. It helps you become even more of a man. But anyways, I know that sounded weird as I just said it out loud. But anywho, before we transition to talking NIL and talking this big bag that a new Big Ten team threw around here, what do you think about this combine? I think it goes without saying there's probably not much of anything for Terrence Shannon to gain, although he is going to talk to the media tomorrow. At least he's on the list of available players. That's the first time.
Wow.
It will be the first time he's spoken since being arrested and charged in Kansas for rape, and obviously his...
That might be the most packed podium at the whole combine.
You would imagine it probably would be. And he has still an ongoing court case that is going to trial, and I think it's interesting that he is now going to use this time to address the media, and I wouldn't imagine he's going to comment any on that court case, that situation at all, but we'll have to see what comes of that ultimately. Beyond that, though, if he's not playing 5-on-5 and he's measuring essentially the same as last year and all that, we know that he's super explosive. He could run the three-quarter court again and have another impressive testing and be like, yeah, we already know that about Terrence Shannon Jr. Coleman Hawkins, though, how much do you think he can gain from another combine experience, albeit that he was in front of these same scouts and on this stage last year as well?
Well, we didn't touch on the biggest storyline coming out of the whole combine this morning. Did you see? Zach Edey can make some threes when there's nobody within 40 feet of him stationary at the top of the key. He made some threes this morning, so that changes everything.
So can every dad out there in America, right? There are 40-year-olds that can drain threes when nobody's... They can take two dribbles and just step into it.
That's why, to me, I don't know how much... I'd love to actually ask, like, an actual NBA scout who attends the combine every year and, like, how drastic of a change, like, on somebody's big board based on where you've already scouted these guys. Like, how much does a 5-on-5 run at the combine, this guy goes off, change things? Like, I think the athletic testing and some of the measurables are important, but once you're actually in these drills and you're making... you know, stationary catch and shoot threes with nobody around you, and you're whatever the some of the drills are, and you're playing 5-on-5. I don't know. It's tough for me to believe that a whole lot changes there. I know it. I almost feel like in the NFL, there's more of a tangible. You can, you know, the testing and the 40 times and some of these agility drills for certain positions, I think actually, you know, a really good combined performance could move you up a couple rounds. And if you really have a bad showing, then maybe you're one of those guys that, oh, he was projected a second round pick. Why is he still available in the sixth type thing? In the NBA combine, I just don't know how much of a difference that stuff makes. And I know you've been on it for a while, but like these drills, they mean nothing to me. Like, yeah, you're a college basketball player invited to the NBA combine. You better be able to make some shots wide open. And you better be able to do your layup lines and hit the mid-range jump shots and move better than 99% of the population. Uh-huh. That's why you're here. I don't know.
No, I'm 100% with you on all those things. And I kind of got a chuckle a little bit out of Jonathan Givony, who's just doing his job for sure, but showing some clips of guy. Oh, this guy shot 19 of 25 on his three-point drill today in front of scouts. Like, he's wide open, taking just in rhythm in the gym, shooting with managers type. Now I get it, like there might be nerves there at the combine, no one who's watching and everything, but
that reminds me of 2 years ago when it felt like there's RJ Melendez made every shot in warm-ups all season long for Illinois, and according to people who are at the game, and it's like, well, he's making 20% in games,
right.
I don't care what he's doing in the warm-up line.
Yeah, no, and I think that you can judge something off of Zach Edey a little bit, like the form, of course, you can watch, even if it is unguarded, even if it is maybe not a shot that he's rushed to take. Now, I don't think anybody immediately is going to try to go out and contest anything that he does on the perimeter. Maybe if he's kind of in like a pick-and-pop or a trailer situation and – there are big men who are just left wide open, and can they make that shot? I think it would be interesting if he can do that. But many would probably say the bigger question for Zach is, like, can he guard in space? Can he guard a big that can legitimately, like a Joel Embiid, who can shoot 35%+ from three, if he can get out there and contest that, or someone that can maybe pump fake and drive him, those type of things. But I was looking because there are centers out there, like a Brook Lopez. I don't know how many threes he made in college. I looked it up today, and he like attempted maybe one per game his final year at Stanford. And I think Boogie Cousins, did he attempt any at Kentucky or make very many at all? Same thing with Anthony Davis. There are guys who just didn't shoot threes in college and, of course, became good stretch bigs. And I'm not trying to make an argument for you right now that Zach Edey's going to be the next Joker, or he's going to be the next Brook Lopez, or anything. But I think that is at least somewhat of interest. A guy who's supposed to make like Reed Sheppard, however many shots he makes in a wide open 3-point drill, doesn't move the needle at all for me. Could be impressive. He makes like 33 of 35 type of thing, but says nothing to me about his shot making in a game. The 5-on-5 stuff with Coleman, I wish it was a better field of players in those 5-on-5s, because you literally don't have one guy, if I'm not mistaken, as I just scroll through these lists, I don't think there's one guy on here that's a projected first-round pick that's going to play 5-on-5. And I know a lot of them are guys that are fringe draft pick type of guys. Now then,
the guys that want to play 5-on-5 are the guys that have something to gain from it.
Yes.
That's the problem with a lot of these things. Like, it's optional. All these things are optional. You could do whatever you want.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's the guys that it can only hurt aren't even participating in these things. So, yeah, you're going up against a guy who's projected to go undrafted.
So who's the better of the pool of fringe draft picks? Maybe there's something to gain there from Coleman. I know last year Coleman didn't shoot the three very well in those 5-on-5s, and if he does it, if he comes in this year and shoots it well, of course, I think...
Again, though, in one 5-on-5 game, let's say he goes 0 for 6 from 3, that's not wiping out the 37% he shot in 35 Division I college basketball games last year.
You're right. But I do think there are maybe some scouts out there that there could be an impression that he could make. I think that if he maybe just stands out a little bit in terms of his overall stat line, if he's one of the more impressive performers in general. I know that Brandon Podziemski last year, when he was at the combine, really stood out in 5-on-5s. And again, that's not to say that him being the co-player of the year with Drew Timmy wasn't the actual, like, in the WCC, wasn't the framework, the foundation for him getting picked in the first round. But I do think maybe there could be a little momentum for a player if they really stand out and those type of things. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think the main point probably is there's not a lot to it. It's maybe more for show. It's maybe more for if there's anything that moves a scout a certain way. Now, if you struggle drastically, or if it does look like Coleman is still favoring the knee at all, or what have you, maybe you could hurt him. But one thing I did think about today, Kyle, is that, and this will transition us into our next conversation, like, let's say Coleman's one of the best players in these 5-on-5 scrimmages that happen, but it doesn't maybe move a ton in terms of like the NBA, or maybe he's still a guy that isn't guaranteed to be picked. Maybe it just makes him all the more, you know, because maybe Gavoni writes about him and it gets people talking, and he just ups his desire or his appeal for people who are like, I hope that guy pulls out of the draft so I can pay him a bunch of money in NIL via the portal. Maybe that's something that could be there for Coleman to gain. Just the spotlight, just to try to be a spotlighted player at the combine, take the notoriety that comes with it. Does it help him enough to get drafted or drafted where he wants? As of right now, a lot of people updated their mock drafts after the draft lottery happened, and he's not mocked for ESPN, The Athletic, for The Ringer, the people that do it professionally at this point, a month before the draft or so, don't think Coleman Hawkins is getting drafted. So
I'm still surprised by that. In this class, you're not taking a second-round flyer on a guy with his skill set. I know he's undersized. I know the 215 weigh-in is not what you want, but get him in an NBA strength program with his skill set and see what you got there in this class in the second round. I can't imagine why a team wouldn't do that. I just can't. And I know I'm biased. I've only watched Coleman. I haven't watched the other 40 guys he's competing for a pick against. But I'm so surprised by that. I think he'd be a home run second round pick in the 40s even.
He's got a chance to be. The upside's there. The fit in the current NBA is obviously there. And I think there are probably some people who are going to forget, or I don't think Illinois fans, but I'm sure maybe there are people at that level or just nationally that maybe don't recognize how good of a defender he is because he guarded the five last year and was tasked with being outside of his comfort zone or outside of where he's effective.
Scouts can see through that stuff, though. There's plenty of tape of him guarding the four. So
yeah,
I think that's – I mean, an NBA scout's going to realize his defensive skill set, and that even more so adds to it. If you're playing him in the front court in the NBA – you talked about can Zach Edey guard in space. We know Coleman Hawkins can.
Of course.
And that's a huge asset for him as an NBA prospect, and I'd just be surprised if there's 60 guys that would be worth taking a shot on more than him in this class. And maybe there are rightfully, but, yeah, ultimately. And this, again, we're going to talk NIL here. I just think it's all probably leading back to a path of he's going to make another big paycheck in the college game next year.
I agree with you. That seems to be the way that it's trending. Coleman quote tweeted the report of...
He's having so much fun with it. I mean, who let Coleman enter the portal? Because you knew he was going to just run with it all off season. He's asking for teams to make edits to him, fan bases make edits to me. He was, I forget, it was one school where he quote tweeted some, maybe it was an Arkansas fan or a Louisville fan something. And he quote tweeted and he's like, let's see what I look like in the red or something.
Oh, gosh. Does that – I put this out to the fan base, put this out to the text line. Does that bother you at all? Like, not to say, like, he's – I mean, he just had a tweet over the weekend of him and Brad Underwood at graduation, and he said, thanks for everything, coach. And it doesn't wipe away the 4 years or anything, but just – he's playing it up. He's playing it up in the portal. He's going to, you know – quote tweet. He already quote tweeted an edit of him in a North Carolina jersey, and now he's going out there. Yeah, it was a Louisville tweet. Let me see what I would look like in a Louisville Cardinals uniform. So, are you fine with it? Are you moved by it? Are you frustrated? Are you frustrated with just the current environment of college basketball? Are you frustrated with the COVID year that we're even having this conversation? He played 4 years already at Illinois, and in a normal situation, he'd be done. But I think a lot of people, though, probably happy for their guy, someone that they still feel is very loyal to Illinois. And if it's going to mean him getting a big paycheck, then so be it. Good for him. The market is very good, especially to big men right now. And I think just in general, if you're deciding late in the cycle, it can be very advantageous.
I do not know why any portal commit would commit anywhere before May. I just I don't understand. Like, there's probably guys that committed in March that got X amount that could have gotten triple that now if they were still in the portal, just based on – now, of course, if everybody waits, then it's probably going to water down the market a little bit because the whole point of it is that there's greater demand than there is supply. But I just – like, if you're in the portal right now, especially as a big man, like you said, but even really any position, it's gotten so dry of proven talent that – teams will way overpay at this point, as we've seen.
Washington is the new Big Ten team that has done so. Is it great? Osabor? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah. Great.
Great Osabor got a great amount of money reported to be by both the Field of 68. I think ESPN's Jonathan Givony was the first one to put it out. At least $2 million an NIL for this upcoming season.
Is that the first time that like an NIL figure has been published with a commitment? Because I think it was it who initially reported? It was an NBA guy, I think, who initially reported the commitment. Was it Shams?
Maybe it was
and
Shams.
He said like Utah State transfer Great Osabor is transferring to Washington and he has upwards of $2 million in NIL deals set up for him. Is that the first time that like a number has come out like that so publicly?
I know shortly after Omar Ballo went to Indiana, Jeff Goodman quote tweeted and said, had been told that it was around $1.2 million to be the asking price. So that there have been a couple of situations like that, but like to be it attached in the commitment tweet, I have not seen that quite yet. And I know that Givony was reporting that this is like the top known, quote unquote, known NIL get for a player to date, that this was supposed to be the biggest pay. Like it's almost like that market setting free agency signing. It kind of seems comparable to that, where you see a quarterback make a new deal, whoever's next up in the quarterback line to sign that new deal.
Tell you what, Coleman Hawkins had a nice big smile on his face this morning when he saw that.
I would think so. Because if you look at great Osibor, he's not some kind of dominant force. I mean, he's a good player. I was looking at his stats. They're nothing crazy. I mean, he put up 18-9, three assists, 58% from the field. Good player.
That was a good Utah State team, too, that he kind of carried.
Yeah. Good player for sure. 6'8" big man. I don't think he – does he take any threes?
No, he's no threes. He's a undersized center, really. That's kind of how he played. I think he kind of played the four for Utah State, but his game is low post around the rim.
So a 6'8" around the rim big man got $2 million.
Yeah. I don't know how well that'll translate to the Big Ten, but that's right. Washington's in the Big Ten.
What was Washington doing when Omar Bala was going for whatever it was, or when some of these other guys were trying to find landing spots? Did they just now come across this? Were they saving it for other people? Like,
would you rather have Omar Bala for 1.2 or great Osibor for $2 million? It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Omar Bala.
It's not even close.
Should have tried to steal Vlad Golden. Not to say he wouldn't automatically follow his buddy Dusty May, but I mean, the difference of like $500,000, or maybe, I don't know if Vlad Golden got $1 million plus. I've heard that big men in particular have just gotten insanely, we'll see if it's overpaid or not, but, and that's another thing, and I want to bring this up maybe for after we catch a break here, but is this sustainable? Is this much money being thrown around? I know that with the COVID year being gone, there's going to be a smaller pool of transfers. I am not in the camp of things are going to slow down. I still think we're going to have crazy offseason cycles. People, as long as you can transfer as many times as you want, there will be a ton of opportunity to go out there and poach players, get players that are wanting more money, guys that are leveraging their NIL. I still don't think we've seen, and maybe it won't happen, but I'd be surprised if we don't, where there are more players who legitimately leave the door open at their previous stop. I know that Coleman, quote-unquote, did, but I think we all know where that one's going. And it is like a free agent to be, or a guy with an opt-out in his contract, just opting out, not saying, hey, I'm not unhappy here. I'm not necessarily needing NIL from somebody else. I just want to be back on the open market and negotiate again. So we haven't seen a lot of those instances. I think that will come more in the future. But how much of this type of competitive dollar figures is going to continue in the future? If Terrence Shannon Jr. got $750,000 or thereabouts, $700,000, whatever it was.
Imagine if Terrence Shannon Jr. from last year was in the portal right now.
Unbelievable. Imagine if Zach Edey
easily double that.
What if great Osibor got $2 million, did Zach Edey royally screw up by not going back to school and going into the portal? Would he not be worth $5 million?
I tell you what, John Calipari would get on the phone and it would be a conference call with Calipari, Jerry Jones, and Edey saying,
and the
whatever
Tyson
you
chicken
want,
guy, right?
Whatever you want, yeah. Whatever you want, if it's $10 million, we'll do it.
Yeah. It's insane. So where does it stop? Will it continue like this? What would Coleman's NIL number be if great Osibor is $2 million? Is it more than that? Is it in that range? We'll talk about all of that next. Stick with us. It is The Drive.
I feel occasional burning and stabbing in my hands as I age.
I sometimes feel numbness and tingling in my feet as I get older.
It's starting to get in the way of doing what I love.
At Nervive, we hear you and we can help. Nervive's clinically studied dose of alpha-lipoic acid reduces occasional nerve discomfort in as little as 7 days with continued daily use.
Now that I know, I'm taking control.
Try Nervive Nerve Relief and say yes to healthy nerves.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Every month we celebrate law enforcement at Stevie J Broadcasting. Officer Sarah Lynx is our law enforcement official of the month from the Urbana Police Department. They say you're a star. Congratulations.
Ooh. Oh, thank you. I don't know about being a star, but I appreciate that.
Well, you've done this work for a number of years in your patrol.
I have. I've been with Urbana for 18, and I've been doing this a total of 22 years.
What drew you to law enforcement?
Right. I always joke and tell people I never wanted to pick out my outfit every day, but actually, I just wanted to help people, and I like to problem solve, and I get a different problem every day to solve.
It's never the same.
It is never the same.
Keep up your great work. We certainly appreciate the vast majority appreciate what police do.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you appreciate for your support, because we do greatly appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you. Officer Sarah Lynx, our law enforcement official of the month, brought to you by MX Electric.
Relax, call back 217-359-7293.
At ABC Heating and Air, it's our promise to help you always be comfortable. Do you need rescued because you're burning hot? Do you need rescued because your air is shot? Call ABC Heating and Air at 352-5400 and let us rescue you from the heat. ABC Heating and Air, 352-5400. Can't you see you need to call me at ABC? Call ABC Heating and Air. That's ABC Heating and Air, 352-5400.
Local, personal, trusted. Hi, this is Atah Durakan with First Federal Savings Bank of Champaign-Urbana, and we've been serving Champaign County since 1908. Our institution is safe, strong, and stable. We operate on a foundation of responsible and sound practices, and you can rest easy knowing we're your bank. Rated 5-star superior by Bauer Financial, Inc. Fast, friendly, and local. With local loan decisions and underwriting, if you're not already banking with us, give us a try, and we think you'll love it here. First Federal Savings Bank, 356bank.com. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS. 435-120.
In an ever-changing real estate market, it is so important to work with experienced agents like Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor teams at Taylor Realty Associates. They have the knowledge and expertise to get your home sold for the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time. Trust the experience and success of Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor team at Taylor Realty Associates. Give them a call today at 217-355-0700 or visit them online at taylorboys.com. That's taylorboys.com.
The Alma Market is your one-stop shop for one-of-a-kind creations from the University of Illinois alumni and students, as well as unique finds from some of your favorite Urbana-Champaign area businesses. Treat yourself or a loved one and support your fellow Illini today. If you're a University of Illinois student, alum, or Champaign-Urbana area business, feature your products on the Alma Market. Becoming a vendor is a great way to expand your reach and connect with Illini across the country. For more details, visit almamarket.org. Go Illini!
By now, you've all heard the expression, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 for PDR Automotive. They are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR. But who are they? They, the PDR staff, understand that a name is only as good as the people that represent it. The PDR staff has more than 335 years of combined automotive experience. Several employees now on staff for more than 25 years. PDR, more than just a name. Family owned and operated, now celebrating over 50 years in business. Dixie Chopper, and he's available out there?
Absolutely. I'm going to throw you out a couple of specials that we're having right now. One is a Rhino 15-foot rotary flex wing with a Dixie Chopper Classic 35-horse 60-inch mower. It's industrial. $35,000 for the pair.
Both of them?
Yep, both of them together. $35,000.
I take it that's an outstanding deal because I'm not...
Saving $13,000.
Oh, okay. Wow.
You're in the mowing business. Well, time for an upgrade.
It's time to mow big time. You'll get all the yards done really quickly with those.
And then if you're looking for just a residential mower on its own, we've got a Z2 48-inch that we've got out there right now for $59.99. That is $2,000 off.
What is the location?
That is 1306 Triumph Drive in Urbana, right down from Farm and Fleet on 45.
Yep.
Or check out Dedicated Diesel on Facebook.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Good point by Ken on the U of I Atlanta League text line in regards to great Asabor going to Washington. Danny Sprinkle, former head coach for Utah State, just got hired this offseason by the Huskies, a six-year deal to go to Washington. So there is that connection, obviously. You think, though,
why do you still got to give him $2 million then?
You'd think that connection could get you a discount, right? Not be like, oh, we'll give you...
Anybody else giving him $2 million?
I have no idea.
I'd be shocked. Although I guess probably. There was probably a bidding war.
You are late in the cycle.
Because it's just, if you're a good player, you're a proven high major player. I mean, I know they were in the Mountain West, but... You probably can get double what you're worth right now.
I'm sure you got desperate teams out there, no doubt. On the note of this late in the year in Washington last season, Washington, I don't know what the final number was, but I remember when Paul Mulcahy went into the portal late, back before the deadline wasn't there, grad transfers could go and whatever. It was late May. He goes in and there were whispers around like, yeah, Paul Mulcahy, to get him, you need at least $500,000. Back when $500,000 was a lot of money, not dabbling into everybody's, I wouldn't say everybody, but you got a lot of people in the $1 million range, and now to see upwards of $2 million is mind-blowing. But yeah, Washington landed Paul Mulcahy. That didn't seem like a very good return on investment for them. He wasn't all that great. And Washington, here for a handful of years, they've had some good players here and there. Keon Brooks at one point, that was a transfer from Kentucky. Isaiah Stewart, Jaden McDaniels, I believe, on one team. They haven't had a good team, though, in a handful of seasons. I think it's been at least 5 years since they've been to the tournament. But, yeah, that's another thing. Like, if you have that in with that player, why are you giving him top of the market value? You think you should at least be able to maybe get a discount to continue to play. If that relationship's good and having that in, you would hope that would be the case. But I know that on the note of Igor Demon with Illinois, like, it sounds like, now that's not official yet. He's not committed anywhere, but I've reported on IlliniInquirer.com. I've shared here on the radio. That one's not happening for Illinois unless some kind of unforeseen change here before a decision's official. But sounds like the Illini, I wouldn't say they got like totally priced out. Now, there was a bidding war on that side of things, and I think the number, whether it went past Illinois' capabilities or just what they would be comfortable giving him, it could be upwards of over $1.5 million, dabbling into close to $2 million. To do that for an 18-year-old, for a guy that's never played in college, yes, a projected lottery pick, there's talk of BYU being the choice. I hadn't heard that for certain. My understanding of from Illinois' side of things, I don't think they know, or at least when they were told at the time, over the weekend, maybe they've been given more indication of where it's going to go, but they just knew it wasn't going to be them, and they figured it would be BYU based on what they had heard. But
BYU's got cash like that?
I don't know.
I'd be surprised.
I don't know.
They just lost their coach, too.
Yep.
And it's a different lifestyle you have to live if you go to BYU.
Sure.
Is a guy from Russia really want to do that?
From Russia to Spain and to, is it Provo?
Yes, I think so. That sounds right.
Yeah. I don't know. There was even, though, I think from Illinois' side of things, or just kind of asking around for people that, you know, he had followed, not that we're going to spend too much time here on Igor because he's, not
the good old Instagram follow
Instagram
tracker.
Instagram follows, man. John Calipari in Arkansas. And that type of money lines up with what they're apparently working with here. And that leads me into my next, what we were talking about before the break. Is this sustainable? Are we going to see these type of numbers going forward most off seasons, at least for the foreseeable future? Is the market now being set where a top-end transfer is costing you $2 million instead of last offseason where it was, hey, give him a guy like Terrence Shannon Jr. who was, you were retaining him, give him $750,000. As someone mentioned on the text line, I think it was Mike said, didn't Hunter can't beat Illinois Dickinson, to give you the accurate thing of what Mike texted, get $1 million plus on his NIL deal at Kansas last year. Yes, that was what I heard.
Boy, if he was in the portal right now, he'd be getting an astronomical amount.
That's another one. So, to toss it back to you, Kyle, do you think, and we don't know this, I haven't surveyed boosters out there, and I do have an opinion on it, which we're going to get into. Do you think this is something that we're going to continue to see at this price? Will it continue to spike? What's the cutoff? Is there going to be a downturn in the market? I don't know. What do you think?
You'd have to imagine it's probably going to have to level out a little bit at some point. The pace at which it's kind of increased here since NIL. When did NIL officially get passed?
It was the season that Kofi came back from the draft. Yes. So, yeah, it was the 21-22 season.
Just the pace at which nobody was coming anywhere close to $2 million those first couple off seasons. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but there's right.
Never heard that.
Yeah, that you probably were struggling to get to seven figures for even a Kofi level player. I mean, I think if I remember you correctly, you said that Illinois was trying to get close to $1 million to try and lure Kofi back for his senior year. And imagine if you're trying to lure him back this offseason, $1 million. Are you kidding me? He enters the portal and he's got 18 offers that double that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that, especially if it keeps rising, which you'd have to expect naturally that it probably would. I don't think there's any world where it's going to be sustainable in any way for a college athlete to be making like $4 million or something. Let's say a Zach Edey level player is in the portal and he gets $4 to $5 million. There's no way. That's a lot of schools' athletic budget is half that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that it's going to be able to sustain like this. And I also I think it puts a lot of pressure on a program to win with that investment too, because I do think if it is coming straight from boosters and if this money is coming from outside sources, if you spend $5 million on a roster and they miss the tournament, you're not getting $5 million the next year. That's right. Not happening.
That's right.
And so and for the blue blood programs, you probably are going to have that money to be there all the time. But I can't imagine that it's got, especially if it keeps rising. This is about where I can see it leveling off. But if you're talking $2 million is going to become the norm for a great Osabor level player, it's at Washington, not Duke.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that that's going to last more than maybe 1 to 2 years before you realize that investment, like you said, you're not getting close to the proper return on investment on that investment there. So I just can't imagine that it's going to stay like this forever.
I'm with you on that. I don't claim to know for certain that it will change back, that, hey, we'll get back to a top-end talent, gets $1 million. Maybe a little
bit
more.
I don't necessarily know if it's going to decrease again.
Yeah, right.
I think this is kind of the max, right, or maybe slightly above this. I just don't see it continuing to grow at the levels that it seemingly has the last year.
Yeah. I think there will always be outliers, because you're always going to have, maybe in the right situation, someone who it has the deep enough pockets. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to be bothered to spend probably, if he gave Arkansas and Cal $10 million this year, why couldn't he give them $10 million next year, right? If he wanted to, I think he could.
That's the other side of it, right, is regulating how much one school can spend compared to another.
If we ever get there. And I think if you're the Minnesotas of the world, you're dying for that to happen. Now, I would not for a second believe, even with a hard salary cap, then you're going to get people paid under the table. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you're never going to be able to fully fight against. Now, then you're putting the NCAA back on those missions to hunt down the cheaters and those type of things. That's why this open season thing really washes their hands of it. And look, to their credit, they've tried to fight back on the how many times you can transfer and be eligible, and the court said it's too bad. You don't have a say in that. So, yeah, I think that there maybe, you hear about the FedEx money that Memphis has, or there are different places that have well-placed boosters, donors, alums that are just made of money, flush with money. If they were so motivated or so willing to every offseason fork over a big chunk of money, then every season that team's going to have top-of-the-market dollars to spend. Others are in a situation I don't think Indiana is going to be, topping the Big Ten for a few years and then dipped down to the middle of the pack. But I had heard that this offseason in particular, there were some motivated boosters who were backing Mike Woodson. It was kind of like a, if you really want Mike Woodson to be here for another season, slash let's get him on firm ground, put your money where your mouth is, put it towards NIL, give him the ammunition to go back in the portal and load this roster up and give him a chance to turn the program back to where it's supposed to be, at least from the perspective of the Indiana supporters. It sounded like the people that advocated to have Mike Woodson keep his job, they were then forking over the NIL to make it make sense. So maybe if it doesn't work out for them, and I that was a thought I had in mind as well, Kyle. I think it's really important to hit, to have the return on investment, to then go back to where you got the money and say, look what we got, and to then recuperate, to expand how you're going to be able to go get your money. Because if you misspend people's money, you're going to rub people the wrong way. And if you do it to the wrong person, that person may cut you off and say, I'm not giving you any more money. You went and spent it on Sky Clark and he left after 13 games or something like that. So
that's why it's more so like winning. While winning is obviously helpful for an athletic department and making them profitable and obviously is helpful. In terms of NIL, winning has more of an intangible effect of like, if you keep winning, then your NIL budget's just going to keep going up and up and you're going to keep getting more people that want to support the program. If you misuse a huge NIL budget multiple times and you miss the tournament with this crazy donor, these crazy donors that have given you $5 million to work with, and you spend it on a guy who leaves halfway through the season and can't lead you anywhere, then you're probably not going to get that same money. So you, like, the winning part of it is almost more of an intangible aspect, like where you need to win to get that NIL source back for the next season. It's not necessarily, oh, winning's going to make you X from the TV contract or anything right. like that.
No, yeah, it's funny how that has changed to where it used to be, oh, well, and it's, I had the experience of it being framed towards Illinois. They need to win so they can go into the living rooms of these bigger name recruits, the five-star recruits or the big recruits out of Chicago and say, did you see us in the tournament? Did you see us win the Big Ten? Players want to be part of winning programs. But I'm not saying that that's not the, no longer the case.
Now you got to wine and dine the millionaire now alum and say, did you see us in the Elite Eight? How about a check?
Yes. So maybe now you're trying to win. I mean, you know why you're trying to win. You're trying to, for your own job security, because you're competitive, because you want those trophies, those net cutting, all the things. But maybe where it matters the most in recruiting is, yes, recruiting the NIL donors to give you the money to then go get the players. I think it's all very interesting as far as that goes. Before we catch a break, what is or maybe we should tease this. Yeah, let's tease this.
We got to talk 2 minutes of football. I mean, that's a big
addition. Oh, yeah,
addition.
That's my fault. All right, real quick, and then we'll do football at the end. What is Coleman Hawkins' NIL value? If Great Osabor is $2 million, is he worth $2 million? Is he worth $1.5 million? He's definitely worth $1 million, I think.
Do we have to compare it just
that's
to him?
True. Yeah, you're right. No.
Because it's a different 1.2, answer.
Yeah.
If he did really like reset the NIL market for everybody that's left, it's a different question than just how much you think Coleman Hawkins is worth.
Right. Okay. Then how much do you think Coleman Hawkins is worth?
I'd say $1 million. In this market, I'd say he's a $1 million player, but nothing much more than that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It sounded to me like, and I know there's a no contact designation by Coleman Hawkins' name. Look, his agent wouldn't be doing his job if he wasn't out there talking to people and floating things out. And look, Coleman's playing around with fan bases on Twitter of put me in edits and stuff. I don't want to go on the your head's in the sand if you think no contacts are actually having no contact. It does sound like there are multiple teams very seriously interested in giving Coleman Hawkins $1 million in NIL. I think that's very, very realistic and makes sense. I think, yeah, anywhere 1.5, is Coleman then going to get 2 from somebody else? I don't know. If the bidding war ticks up high enough, maybe, but I wouldn't say he's necessarily worth that. or that he's going to get that. This might have just been of a one of those outlier situations. It will be interesting to follow. 217-359-2255 for your opinion on the U of I Atlanta Link text line. We'll talk about Brett Bielema's big addition over the weekend when we return. This is The Drive.
Your lawn is an important investment. Let Spring Green take care of that lawn. Your local, family-owned and operated Spring Green has been committed to beautifying your neighborhood through quality service and professionalism. Spring Green's full program customers are backed by their guarantee of satisfaction. Smart Money Magazine reports that consumers value a home with a well-maintained lawn and landscape up to 11.3% higher than the base price. Why don't you call Spring Green today, 359-2111, or visit them at spring-green.com.
I'm Leslie Ingold. I am a nurse and a regional stroke coordinator for OSF Healthcare in Urbana and Danville. May is Stroke Awareness Month, and there's an easy mnemonic that we can refer to when we're worried that someone we know or someone we're near is having a stroke, and we tend to use the acronym BFAST. B is for balance. Am I leaning to one side or the other? E is for eyes. Vision trouble. F is for face. Take a look at their face. Does it look symmetrical? A is for arms. Stick your arms out, palms up, close your eyes, and take a look to see if one arm drifts or if they both stay the same height while you hold them for a count of 10. S is for speech. When speech comes out, does it make sense? And then T is for time. Call 911. Get to the hospital right away. Our treatment methods are based on how quickly that you can get to the hospital for treatment. Learn more at osfhealthcare.org.
This is Joy Sheehan. In 2016, my husband Rob and I lost our son Christian in a house fire. Since that date, my family and I, along with the Champaign Fire Department, have been on a mission to save lives by purchasing and installing working smoke alarms in the Champaign area. We need volunteers to help us install smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors. On Saturday, May 18th at 8 a.m., we will meet at Douglas Community Center. All are welcome and training will be provided by Champaign Fire Department. Donations are needed to buy smoke alarms. It costs approximately $275 to protect the average home. Checks can be made payable to Community Foundation of East Central Illinois. Mail checks to Community Foundation of East Central Illinois, 307 West University Avenue, Champaign, 61820. For more information or to volunteer, please search for annual Christian Sheehan Smoke Alarm Blitz on Facebook.
Finishing up on The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. And admittedly, as we finish the show, we maybe should have led the show with this. But we're getting to it nonetheless. Illinois football has a cornerback, Kyle. They got a corner in the portal. And not just any corner. An all-conference, honorable mention, but still all-conference.
Guy who was on the football field starting in the Sugar Bowl last year against Washington in the college football playoff.
That sounds good. That sounds like a good place to be.
This is a nice change of pace, isn't it, that we actually get to get excited about a football portal edition and not just basketball 24/7?
I'm very much with you on that. You would imagine, and this is with no knowledge, Jeremy Warner would be the one to really fill you in on kind of the behind-the-scenes, the inner workings of what led to, maybe we should get him on this week, Terrence Brooks from Texas, a former four-star out of high school, ranked by 24/7 as a four-star transfer, chooses Illinois over some other options. You were talking about it.
He was lining up, reportedly, visits to Michigan and USC after Illinois, which Illinois didn't allow him to line up because they locked him down.
You would think that he's got a pretty good NIL situation. Obviously, opportunity. I mean, he's going
to
come in. He's been a starter before, but so it's not like, hey, you can start here. Oh, that's something I haven't done before. I would imagine that you would have some kind of situation where NIL played a factor. Maybe there was a ponying up of Illinois'. I don't know if their pool of money on the NIL side really increased here. Of course, you got guys like Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph off the books and whatnot, but
you'd have to imagine that some money did free itself up, especially since it had been a pretty dry portal cycle for them, the early portal cycle. I know you got JC Davis is a good player, but in terms of high impact guys that would be commanding NIL money, you really didn't do a whole lot.
Yep.
Plus you lose a lot of NFL guys that probably were making a lot to return last year. You'd have to imagine there was a decent chunk available there to go piece together some things. And to get a starting caliber corner, I mean, a starting corner for Illinois was the number one need by far that they had. But a starting corner for Illinois was a pretty low bar at this point. Let's just be honest. You could have gotten a lot of guys that would have been in line to start at Illinois. This is not just an Illinois starting corner. This is a guy who started 19 games for a really good Texas program the last 2 years, started 13 games last year for a college football playoff team. This is a proven, really high level power conference starting corner, and that is a big-time addition for this Illinois football team that, honestly, just with that one addition, I know there's still plenty to do, makes you feel a lot different about this defense and, honestly, this team's outlook in general, getting an impact player like that at the position that was causing so much concern.
Makes you feel a lot better. This is a little bit of an exaggeration, but it almost feels like you could have held walk-on tryouts and maybe came away with a guy that would start a corner next year for Illinois based on losing Taz Nicholson, who struggled last year and was disappointing, who transferred. Zach Toby, who after spring ball transfers. It was a bad position group last year, and then you didn't really go out and improve it at all. You actually got worse. But, yeah, for Terrence Brooks to come in, he started 19 of 23 games in two seasons in Austin. All Big 12 honorable mention this past season. Like you said,
based on what I've read, really good man coverage. Yep. Guess what Aaron Henry likes to play.
Yep.
Seems like a great fit.
Good size for also as well. They need it. They need it in a big way. I'm not saying it answers all questions on defense, but it does make you feel a decent amount better about it for sure. And that's one criticism I've had of Brett Bielema here recently, or just post that 2022 team, when you had the number one scoring defense in the country. You had what's turned out to be a number of pros, to not reload that in the portal.
Especially in the defensive backfield with what you did in that 2023 draft. This is the type of player that you should have been going after last offseason. And it's good to see that you were still able to use the Devin Witherspoon sell on a guy like Terrence Brooks. But this is the type of swing that you should be taking when you put three guys in the first 2 days of the NFL draft and have the defense you did 2 years ago.
The swing to take, the swing to connect on.
Yeah.
The one that you should be getting done because of that sell, the development. And then, of course, you need the NIL there, which it's obvious Illinois basketball has been more strong and more of in a competitive spot NIL-wise versus the market on the basketball side than the football side. But this is a big one. This is a really big one for Illinois football. Quick note before we get out of here. Corey Parker has been hired as the defensive backs coach, coming over from...
Don't tell Lon what the name of that school is. He doesn't want to hear that. Maybe only for basketball.
Toledo.
Hey, he developed the first-round pick this past year, Quinyon Mitchell, first corner off the board.
That's right. Good call. So some big defensive back help the last few days, getting Corey Parker from Toledo and Terrence Brooks, starting corner. I'm already giving him the starting nod.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty safe from Texas.
Not only this.